Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield to Knightstown and beyond. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine. With care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
You're listening to Rob Kendall.
When we talk about sending money somewhere, we're talking about printing the money because we have no money.
And Casey Daniels.
My government would never lie to me, would they?
On 93 WIPC.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, April 17th. It's 7 minutes after nine. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Let's talk about what's going on in B-Town. IU Bloomington's faculty overwhelmingly passed a vote of no confidence of the president, Pamela Whitten. And they passed with a 93% of the vote.
Okay, so this is amazing to me. This no confidence vote. Now, this lady, I am sure, everything about her that I've read, I mean, she's probably a very reliable kind of mainstream American liberal. But almost everything in this vote is about her refusal to go along with complete and utter radicalization of a college campus. And it is amazing to me that, look, if you are sending your kid to Indiana University at this point, you are sending them in to a far left lunatic insane asylum indoctrination factory, because this vote of no confidence. Now, it has no bindings. She's not going to be kicked out. The board of trustees appears to be firmly entrenched behind her. I saw Quinn Buckner came out with a statement, supporting her. But this is crazy stuff. And so much of it, Casey, centers around this administration's refusal to go full-fledged all-in for Hamas.
Yeah. Okay. So part of the petition is citing Professor Sinnoh's violation. He helped a student create formal procedure for a gathering, pro-Hamas
he
gathering.
Didn't, okay,
he didn't want to. He helped students do that.
Yeah, he didn't book a room properly. Okay, let's.
Okay,
that's all. That's it. He didn't go through the proper procedure. They said you can't do this. You have to follow procedure. There is a way to book rooms at our university. And because this guy and the people around him and the people he's associated with are perceived to be pro Hamas supporters, this faculty lost their mind because the administration said you have to follow rules and procedures around here. There's a way we do things. It's a fairly large campus. Here is the proper way in which you do this. And he didn't do it. And they said, no, you can't do that. And so what we are seeing now is the faculty coming out. This is what you're seeing. You're seeing outward, forward movement. It's not in the shadows. It's not with any trepidation. It is full-fledged charge from the Indiana University faculty saying that if you push back, as an administrator, if you push back against the idea of anything that is now 100% pro-Hamas and anti-Israel, and Israel's the bad guy, we are not going to say you should be fired from your job.
So they had 948 faculty members show up to this meeting. There's over 3,000 that were eligible to vote. But as you mentioned, it looks like the Board of Trustees, they're supporting Whitten. They said that she's leading at a time when higher education, where the status quo is not an option. It really doesn't mean anything, though. Nothing's going to change. The last time there was a vote of no confidence with 2005, the president announced that he was leaving at the end of his contract in 2008. But Whitten's contract doesn't expire until June of 26. So what are they trying to accomplish? They're just getting their opinion known that they're not happy.
Well, it's almost the Bill Maher thing, in the sense of, we talked about Bill Maher is a reasonable person. He's a liberal, but he seems like a reasonable person you could have a somewhat intellectually stimulating conversation with, and he is willing to call out crazy people. However, I have no sympathy for Bill Maher, because he helped create the crazy people. And this is sort of the same way with these university administrators, where the monster is now alive. The doctor, the Dr. Frankenstein creates the monster, and the monster is now alive. but I don't have any sympathy for these Dr. Frankensteins because they enabled this. They have enabled the growth and spread of this disease, which is radical leftism, in many cases, full out Marxism, communism, inside the, not just on the campus from the students, but from the people who work there. The universities have fostered this way of think and behavior for many, many years now, and it has now totally gotten out of control. And the point is, just, we've talked about this for years in this program, liberalism exists, radical leftism exists to continue to eat everything around it, because someone must always be oppressed and someone must always be the oppressor. That's the tenet of the whole thing. And eventually they will come for you. It's the same thing Bill Maher has found out. Remember, when Trump was in power, Bill Maher was a vile, vicious, awful human being. And he riled these people up and he ginned these people up. And now that Trump's not in power anymore, they have to have someone else to come for. Well, Bill Maher's a 60-something, whatever-year-old white guy who occasionally has politically incorrect opinions. Oh, now they're turning on you. So it's this act of self-survival. Well, you don't have any sympathy for these people because they created this. They fostered this. They allowed this. It's totally out of control now, but it's too late.
Okay, it is also, you mentioned calling out all the crazy people. Something happened very similar to that over at NPR, where they suspended a senior editor. He wrote an essay where he was pretty much calling out the bias on NPR, and he was suspended for 5 days without pay for doing it.
Yeah, so another example of this is not, it's not about fair and balanced. It's not about finding the truth. It's not about holding both sides accountable. The overwhelming majority of the mainstream national media is completely in the tank for the Democrats and for leftism. And if you have the audacity to raise your hand and go, no, 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 that's not right. Our job is to give information for the to the public. You get the treatment that this guy gets. All he did was simply say, no, we're not fair anymore. That's it. Yep. The guy simply said, we are not fair anymore. We are not balanced anymore. We are totally in the tank for one side. And look at how he gets treated. He was suspended for having the audacity to tell the public, we're not fair anymore.
So he's worked at NPR for 25 years, and he said that they've always had a liberal bent ever since he was hired at the outlet. And he said that they've lost their open-minded spirit, and it's not an audience that reflects true America anymore. His bosses did not particularly like that.
Well, and I think everybody has kind of known that. Like, I don't think if you were to stop someone on the street and go, NPR has long had a left tilt, that wouldn't surprise anyone. But again, it's the almost the exact same thing we're talking about with whether it is a Bill Maher or it is the situation with IU, mm-hmm. where when you continue to placate and foster insanity, the only way for the insanity to go is up, and eventually it reaches a point where it can't be hidden anymore. It can't be disguised anymore. There is no rationalizing with it anymore. And if you attempt to rationalize with it, you are vilified and they try to cancel you. It's the same thing they're doing to this woman at Indiana. It's the same thing they're doing to this guy at NPR. It's the same thing they try to do to Bill Maher. It must keep eating. This thing it's Pac-Man. Like, if you can just picture it on the computer screen or your video game screen, Pac-Man, it has to keep going. It has to keep chomping the little things up. That is what it is. And eventually, it will come for you.
Well, newsrooms are supposed to be run on trust, right? You're supposed to run on the facts and not pick and choose stories. And that's what NPR apparently was doing. Like, they chose not to even mention the laptop from hell story with Hunter Biden. And the staff was happy about that. That way they didn't have to talk about any of the bad things that the Biden administration has done, and yet they were railing against Trump and everything that he had done.
All right, can we take a break? Because we have to talk about something very important when we come back.
Okay.
OJ's Bronco is for sale.
And for a lot of money, too.
Oh, my goodness. I'm actually surprised that the estimate will blow people away.
It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So it's for sale. And one place is going bankrupt, possibly. Let's start with the thing that's for sale. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Did you just play
Rock Lobster? Is that what that was in the lead up to the story about Red Lobster?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I was trying to keep it thematic.
All right, Casey, what do you want to do? OJ's Bronco is for sale or Red Lobster's in big trouble? What are we doing?
Let's do OJ's Bronco for sale. So it's the white 1993 Ford Bronco that he got in, and 100 million people tuned in on television to watch him do that.
Think about it. That time, highway. What was that? Probably one out of every two and a half people in the country then. I mean, obviously there weren't 330 million people in the country in 1994. That's a staggering, that's a staggering statistic.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. So this SUV, it's had three owners, one of them being his former agent. And they said that they've always planned on putting it up for sale this year, which just happens to be the 30th anniversary of that low speed chase.
They bought it for $75,000 in 1996. There's three people who own it together.
Yep.
And now they estimate that they think they're going to get $1.5 million via auction.
Yeah.
Okay. So I am torn on this because there is one part of me that says it's such a piece of American history.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about how I think you could make a pretty compelling case that the OJ, we'll just say it's saga as a collective, but even if you want to say the Bronco chase in particular, when you talk about 100 million people viewing something, is one of the five or six most, you know, relevant from a historical, societal perspective, whatever, events of the 20th century. So there's a part of that that's obviously it's the central figure. We think of the whole OJ case, you think the Bronco chase is what you think of.
Yeah, it was the beginning of it.
It is the piece, right? It is the central thing. So from that perspective, it is a piece of historical memorabilia, and people collect and hold on to all sorts of weird, bizarre things. But then there's also the fact of, right, that it is centers around a double homicide where this guy killed two people and ultimately got away with it. So on one hand, I see the value in owning it because it's a highly centralized piece related to one of the most significant events of the 20th century. But then also it's like, yeah, but
why would you want it?
Right.
Yeah.
He killed two people.
Like, are there bloodstains in the vehicle? I'm sure it's been cleaned up many times since then. And does it run properly? Is it a resto mod? Is the AC working? Who knows? But even if you were to purchase it, what are you going to do with it? And this isn't the sort of thing that you're going to brag to your friends about. Many people collect.
Oh, sure it is. No way. No, it totally is.
So?
Why else would you buy it?
Well, I don't know. Why would you buy it? That's what I'm asking. There's all sorts of collectibles, but it's from good moments in history.
No. There's people who own Hitler stuff and everything else. I mean, you would own this. If you bought this, you are either, obviously, you're a highly eccentric, wealthy person. If you have $1.5 million, I think it may even go for more than that. I mean, but you obviously have a large amounts of disposable income. What are you going to do? Take it and drive it around the interstate? I mean, you're going to put it out for display. You want to show people, I had enough money to buy this. You know, it's probably going to be somebody either that is already has a large collection of stuff related to that case, or a car collector. And yeah, you're going to put it out there. You might even take it for a spin. It probably runs.
Somebody like Jay Leno could buy it. He's a car collector with a lot of money.
Yeah, I think he tends to buy things that are universally kind of unifying. I don't think he's probably, I mean.
Is this kind of like watching a horror movie? You do it to get that, you know, tingle up your spine?
Sure.
Like you got this
in
your garage.
You say you own it. I mean.
Hey, you want to go see OJ's Bronco?
I wouldn't do it, but I recognize there are people with large amounts of disposable income out there who would want to own this just for the thrill of saying, I own one of the most historic pieces of memorabilia in American history in the 20th century. I mean, it's a puff your chest out sort of thing to say that you own it. And quite frankly, I mean, I tend to lean that I can see where somebody would want to do that. And I don't think I would necessarily judge them because that was such a moment in time that will live on forever. I mean, that photo wasn't on the cover of Time and Newsweek and of, you know, Al Cowling's driving that, you know, that, you know, It's iconic. I feel bad using that word, but iconic
infamous.
Photo. Infamous. Thank you. Photo with all those cop cars behind him and that Bronco going at a very slow speed. I don't think I would judge somebody for buying this. I wouldn't personally do it, but I can see why, given its place in American history, somebody would want to own this.
Yeah, forget the $1.5 million for OJ's Bronco. I would just be happy with a $40,000 new Bronco.
Well, I can see that, yes.
Okay, let's talk about Red Lobster. Reportedly mulling over bankruptcy, that all-you-can-eat shrimp thing didn't exactly work out for them.
Blaming you.
Did I miss out on that?
You were supposed to go and you never went. Remember, we were going to have a whole thing. You and Casey were going to go see how much shrimp you could eat, and I guess that never transpired.
So they're not offering that challenge anymore?
I don't know anymore. I mean, I feel like you've had ample opportunity. I mean, this was a month ago or so we were talking about this, and you didn't go. You and I had this conversation. I don't know. This might have been when Kev was gone, that they were... that these sort of mid-level restaurants are kind of in trouble now because it seems like high-end dining, like a St. Elmo, is doing very well, and it seems like the McDonald's of the world are doing well, but it seems like this middle ground is struggling because the middle class is getting squeezed, and the rich people can still afford the St. Elmo shrimp, and the poor people can still afford McDonald's. But it's like that, you know, this middle ground is really getting squeezed out because food is getting so expensive.
Well, when you talk about a place like St. Elmo, that's a destination dining, right?
Sure.
You're going to go there for a special event, or if you have a really big wallet and money doesn't matter to you. McDonald's, yeah, that's something that you maybe don't choose to do, but you can still afford it more than you can like a Red Lobster. A Red Lobster, is that like date night? Is that a special occasion sort of place? They reported that they had a $12.5 million operating loss last year.
No, that was in the fourth
quarter.
It was just in the fourth quarter.
Right.
They had a $12.5 million operating. That's simply unsustainable, and I think it's a mixture of the food is getting so expensive, the ability to ship the food is getting so expensive, that you have to obviously raise the prices. Well, then you start literally pricing people out of being able to afford your thing, and now you're just stuck in this weird vortex, and then you've got people like Kev who say they're going to come and then they don't come. It's like the Eclipse thing we talked about yesterday. And so you got bad unloyal customers like Kevin, and now you're in chapter 11.
So they branch out, and now you can get like the Cheddar Bay biscuits in the frozen aisle at the grocery store.
Well,
right,
we had discussed that. My wife did that for Thanksgiving, and they sat there for 6 months, and I finally told her, you need to make these or I'm going to just start throwing them at a wall and see how long it takes them to shatter. And they're great. They're great, but I think those are probably even a little pricey.
Well, so the brick and mortar Red Lobsters may be going away, but of course the brand then will live on if they continue to distribute your frozen food items.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, you guys want to talk about the fact that McCartney and Lennon's loser kids are trying to grift off the family legacy. There's something going on with them.
Yeah, their sons, James and Sean Lennon, came out with a song.
Oh,
they collaborated.
That's just,
yeah, and it's been released.
Probably just right up there with one of the all-time greats, and I can't wait to hear that. By the way, did you see this too, that a salary a single person needs to live comfortably in the state of Indiana? Did you see what that is?
Yes, I did see. Can you believe what Indiana is?
Boy, we'll talk about that. It's very high. It's a lot higher than I actually thought, Casey.
Yeah, it's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
How much do you need right to live comfortably in the great state of Indiana. Well, that is subjective, but the people at MIT say they've got it figured out for you. It is 9:35 with Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So they actually define the word comfortable, which is interesting because that is typically a subjective term. But they say if you define it as having a monthly income needed to cover the 50-30-20 budget, which means 50% of your earnings go to necessities like housing and utility costs, 30% go to your discretionary spending, and then 20% goes to savings and investments. They have the number of what you need to live comfortable here in Indiana.
All right, let's do this with a disclaimer, too. I would bet a sizable portion of the populace goes nowhere near saving 20% of their paycheck every month.
Well, not now. I would say no.
I would imagine that's a minute amount of, this is certainly a good, I think they're being fair. I'm not saying they're being unfair. I think this is a good way to kind of go about it. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine the average person saves nowhere near 20% of their paycheck. All right. So the number to me for Indiana was staggering. I would not have thought it would have been this high. However, what you want to just roll through the top five,
sure,
before we get to Indiana, because that, like I said, that Indiana number, if you would have asked me what the number for Indiana was, I would have said probably 75% of what the ultimate number was.
Yeah, I was surprised at how high it was as well.
Because I don't think the average person, I know the average person's not making anywhere near what the final number is. But let's roll through. You want to go through the kind of top five?
These top five cities they have listed?
Because
sure.
The top five states.
You
top
would
five
expect
states.
Them.
Yeah, these are the...
These aren't surprising to me at all, but they say to live in Massachusetts, you need $116,000.
And that's number one.
Yeah, number one. Hawaii is $113,000. California, also $113,000. New York, $111,000. And Washington, $106,000. I'm assuming they mean Washington State, $106,000 to live comfortably.
Yes, not Washington, D.C. All right, so it's Massachusetts, Hawaii, California, New York, Washington. Mm-hmm. Massachusetts, number one, at $116,022. Indiana comes in, Casey, at $85,030.
Yes.
$85,030.
So based on these findings, Caitlin Clark, who will be the newest resident of Indiana, is not going to be living comfortably. Because
yes, that's
they
right.
released that, what, her contract for her rookie year will be something like $78,000.
Right, that's correct.
Yeah. So even superstar Caitlin Clark, just based on, you know, WNBA salary, cannot live comfortably here in Indiana. And
okay, so let's put this in perspective that according to the U.S. Census, the most recent one, mm-hmm. the median house, no, this is household income, not even individual income.
Right. This is for a single person.
Right. So that was,
yes,
the median household income mm-hmm. in Indiana is $67,173.
That's with two people working or the whole house working.
So let's bring all of this full circle because it can come back to a very valuable lesson about what we talk about every single day. When we talk about the crushing impact property taxes is having on a regular person, when you realize what a study like this shows, that the median household income isn't even reaching in Indiana, nor really even close to what an average individual would need in order to live comfortably. And then you realize that every single year, the government is taking more from you on something you're not bringing in any income for. You want to talk about just a train derailing towards crisis point?
Mm-hmm.
That's why we spend so much time on that topic on this show, because people are already getting crushed. The average person is not even making half of what this study is saying they should need in order to live a comfortable existence.
To live comfortably, yeah. Now, this is for single people. If you're on your own, which can be, in some cases, more expensive. Obviously, you don't have somebody to split the cost with.
Right.
And this is known as singles tax. They say housing is more expensive, groceries are more expensive, travel, transportation, everything. The groceries, because many times you can't buy the single serving food.
Sure.
And then it'll go bad. So there's a lot of waste there.
But you think about what comes with often living with another person. Like if you're married, obviously, mm-hmm. then oftentimes you're injecting kids into the equation. I don't know if you're aware, Casey, kids are pretty expensive. So how about the kid tax?
Welcome to the party,
yeah,
Rob.
Yeah, right. I mean, so yeah, there's a singles tax. Mm-hmm. There's also a kid tax. And I'll tell you, having paid both the singles tax and the kid tax, way more expensive.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Now we talk a lot about property taxes, how that is crushing everybody. And now we have to acknowledge that there's another stealth inflation driver. And you know, you're probably, your auto insurance has gone up, but now people are complaining about the homeowner's insurance, which is going up. It has increased in most cases 20% over the past 2 years.
Yep. And so what it has basically done is it has risen 50% from an average nationwide of $1,272 in 2019 to now $1,905 mm-hmm. in 2023. And so you think about, like, again, all of these things go into the price of your home, what you pay for your home each month. So you are basically, if you're lucky, because nobody wants to actually have to use their homeowner's insurance. I mean, there's not a single person out there. Well, there are some people, sometimes for nefarious purposes, but mm-hmm. there are very few people who are out, wake up each day and are like, oh my goodness, I sure hope I get to use my homeowner's insurance today. I hope a tornado hits my house or a hailstorm ruins my roof. You're basically flushing $700 extra in 5 years. We're not talking about 20 years ago. We're not talking about 30 years ago. We're talking 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. You're flushing $700 a month, a year down the drain, which you hope you don't use. You hope you don't use that $1,905 a year. Again, unsustainable. But this is because everything is so much more expensive that the insurance companies simply cannot keep up. And I had a long conversation with my insurance guy this past year, and he said many of these insurance companies are still doing things at a loss. People can be mad at the insurance companies all they want. They said many of these insurance companies are still losing money and are simply trying to phase in these increases so that they don't have people just completely opt out of their system or their company altogether. And in some cases, some of these major insurance companies are still taking $1 billion plus annual losses. So get ready, Val. You think it's bad now. It's mm-hmm. only going to continue to go up.
Well, and you've got the high mortgage rates right now. And of course, the Fed just said that there won't be cuts. We're looking at somewhere around 7% for the 30-year mortgage. You've got record home prices. And now you've got the property taxes. And if that's not enough for you, let's tag on some inflating insurance rates as well. I mean, it's costing people home ownership.
Yeah.
Who want to get into that market, they can't. They can't simply afford it.
But it's also costing you the renters too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably actually costing the renters more because, as we've talked about, when there becomes the inability to get into a home,
they're not building equity either.
You're right. And when you have an inability to get into a home, you then empower the landlords mm-hmm. even more. And they can basically charge you whatever they want to charge you because where are you going to go? And then it becomes this spiral, like we talked about, of how so many older people are living with their parents once again. Now, some people do that because it's, you know, they take care of a loved one, or it creates a more stable environment for an older loved one. And I'm not saying this in any way to judge people. What I'm saying is the reality financially is that for more people, simply living on their own is becoming unaffordable.
It's so interesting. The dude and I were having a conversation last night talking about future, what's going on. You know, our daughter's set to graduate. She had texted us yesterday and mentioned that she had done her final presentation.
Oh, how exciting.
And we were, you know, yay, we're so proud of you. Congratulations, as she's nearing graduation at Purdue.
Yeah.
And Jim had made a comment, something like, yep, and then, you know, it's going to take a year or two to get her up and on her own. And I said, and then what? What does that mean? You are not living in reality. There's a new world now. It's not like when, you know, your parents had you, where you would go and get a career and then get married and get a house and, you know, have kids. And then when that kid turns 18, they move out and they start the cycle all over again. It's not like that anymore. We just talked about how expensive it is to live in a home.
I do wonder, and this is probably the best for Kevin, because Kevin is the single person here, and the Kev is the guy without kids here. Kev, you have been trying to, you work, obviously, you go to work each day, you contribute to society, but even you, I think, have found the past 4 or 5 years trying to finagle through this society and life and inflation. I know you've lived with a variety of different people in different circumstances. It's a little difficult.
Yeah, it's a little rough.
And it's not like Kev is some schlub who's, you know, simply spending his days, you know, bumming cigarettes outside a grocery store. The guy goes to work. But it's like, I don't know how a young person would live on their own anymore. Like, I mean, you could do it with roommates or whatever.
Right.
But I'm saying I always lived alone. I never had a roommate other than someone I was having interpersonal relations with. I mean, I never had like a college friend that we rented a house together. Because I liked privacy. I liked my, you know.
It's almost a necessity now.
Yeah, I don't know
how.
I don't know, unless you're some Wall Street professional or something, how a young person would live on their own. That's pathetic.
Okay, so Paul McCartney and John Lennon's sons, they released a new song. They worked together and came out. It's called Primrose Hill. So this is James McCartney. He's the singer of the song. And then John Lennon's son, Sean Lennon, is the one who produced the song. So he's kind of behind the scenes on this.
All right. So why don't we take a break? Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to need to gear myself up to hear this this monstrosity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it'll be a very Beatles thing, or it'll be like nails on a chalkboard, and everybody will say it's the greatest thing ever. But
people are calling it a beautiful track.
Of course they
beautiful,
are. Beautiful,
right? Rob.
Any of these Beatle people or their kids or whatever could fart into the microphone, and people would say how wonderful it is. But I'll try to keep an open mind. Let's play it when we come back.
All right. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Are remembered as some of music's most powerful music partnerships, and now it seems that their sons are following in their footsteps. 9 minutes away from 10, it's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So James McCartney and Sean Lennon have
I didn't even know there
together.
Was a James McCartney. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Paul McCartney's son.
Well, I knew Sean Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sean is the one that he liked, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Julian is the one that he abandoned.
Correct.
Because let's put that out there in the ether. John Lennon was a horrible human being who totally abandoned his wife and kid for some lunatic lady who got up on a ladder one time. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead, Casey. Proceed.
Yeah, so James, who is Paul's son, and Sean, who is John's son, they got together and they created this song, and it was released on Friday. It's called Primrose Hill.
Oh.
And fans apparently are loving it. They're calling it a beautiful track.
Sure they are. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing about the Beatles people is the just complete and utter amnesia that takes place anytime them, or now it's, I guess, relatives. I mean, it is now extended into the next generation of people that no matter what they do, it's just the greatest thing in the history of ever. And I have, ever since I was a wee lad, just it has blown my mind how people But hey, everybody's got their own favorites, mm-hmm. and that's great. And I'm sure you're going to let us hear this just Mr. Holland's opus-esque
song
level of mm-hmm. brilliance, right?
Yeah, you want to hear it?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, here are the Beatles' sons collaborating.
In that. No, go ahead.
It sounds like a Beatles song, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It sounds exactly like, because mm-hmm. you have two no talent hacks and they're trying to grift off their family name, so mm-hmm. that there's not an ounce of originality between the two of them. You remember when they did the big Beatles special in the mid-90s? I think it was on PBS.
You're talking about Anthology?
Anthology, thank you. And they found those two Lennon songs.
Right.
And they Real Love and Free as a Bird. Mm-hmm. And obviously it was highly auto-tuned, whatever. That is exactly how that sounds.
Yeah, it does sound very auto-tuned. In fact, I saw a video on YouTube about how Sean Lennon, that's what he does. He's a producer, and he does it on the keyboard, how he auto-tunes uh-huh. everything. Now,
you mean he makes it up because he's not personally very good? Let me rephrase that for you, Casey. I guarantee if you played Real Love or Free as a Bird right next to that, mm-hmm. it would sound exactly the same.
Paul McCartney apparently very proud of his son, his youngest child, and actually was promoting it out on his social media. Like, hey, right. Listen to James's new song. It's called Primrose Hill. You'll love it.
I will say, it does sound a lot better than that Now and Then song they released a few months ago. Mm-hmm. That was the Beatles.
Yeah. You like this one better?
Yeah, it's a little better, but still, it sounds... I don't think we'd be listening to it if they weren't the Beatles.
Thank you. This is my point. Yeah, I mean, Richie Rich's dad was proud of him, too. But, I mean, come on, right? I mean, it's because they are the spawn and seed of two universally beloved figures, and nobody actually has the guts, other than on this radio show and the guy sitting in this chair right here, to say what that is. That is complete garbage. That is complete crap. And I don't know if you can plagiarize your old man, but it's that too.
I have to read this one review for you. It says, the musical spirit of John and Paul flies over the harmonies.
Straight to the moon, Alice. That's where it flies.
You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.